The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Whole Health Cure podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist. On this podcast, we explore the science and provide inspiration and skills for living your happiest, most fulfilling, and healthiest life. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Colin Zhu. Colin is a primary care physician who's board certified in family practice and lifestyle medicine. He's passionate about the intersection of medicine, food, and nutrition. Dr. Zhu trained as a chef and a health coach at the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts and the Institute for Integrative Nutrition in New York City following completion of his medical degree. In the medical practice known as locum tenens, Dr. Zhu has spent the last 4 years in a series of contract physician roles that include time in Nevada, where he worked with a Native American population at a tribal-run outpatient clinic, a Veterans Affairs system in Louisiana, and a county medicine department in Santa Cruz, California, that runs its own homeless shelter. A fourth position found him at a community health clinic in Seattle with a diverse refugee population. Currently, he works in Los Angeles. His traveling work has been featured in publications such as the DO, MedPage Today, and Stat News. To share his unique blend of medical knowledge with a wider audience, Dr. Zhu launched the Chef Doc website, an online wellness and lifestyle education platform, which has been featured in Jerry Magazine, O Waves, and Brit & Company. Colin is also the author of Thrive Medicine, How to Cultivate Your Desires and Elevate Your Life, a book on enhancing emotional wellness. He's also the host of the podcast Thrive Bites, which he interviews health and wellness experts from all over the world and distills concise insights for your community. Colin, thank you so much for joining on the podcast.
Oh, thank you.
So, Colin, you have an interesting blend of interests. So a lot of your work centers around culinary medicine, lifestyle medicine, and what you call Thrive Medicine. So I'm curious, what led you to bring these different disciplines together?
So again, thank you for having me on the podcast. It's a lot of fun to be here. I would say my journey kind of stemmed from my mother. She is a Chinese medical doctor, and we didn't have any MDs growing up in the household. I think the closest was my father's father. He practiced in China, so I never got to meet him. He passed away when my father was very young. And so my biggest influence was my mother, and she still practices today, actually, in Staten Island, New York. She'll be 71 this year. At first I actually didn't want to be a doctor. I actually want to be a chiropractor. We had a great family chiropractor growing up, and you know, I loved him, adored him. But as I went into high school and then eventually into college, I started to just embark on my medical journey like most people who were pre-med. And I wanted to kind of meet East and West. I wanted to marry the two. And then after going through medical school, I started to witness and experience and go through the paucity of nutritional education, like most physicians. I think the most recent survey in 2010, a national survey, just basically said that 27% required, you know, medical schools to have an actual nutritional course. For me, it was around 10 credit hours, and most of it was biochemistry. So suffice to say, it just wasn't really enough. I graduated off cycle. I stayed back to become a teaching assistant. And so that gave me around 9 months to play with before I matriculated into residency. And then during that time, I asked myself, what am I going to do? You know, most people would, you know, travel, and some would do research to beef up their resume. And I decided to go into culinary school. And the reason for this was my parents both cooked growing up. So I was very familiar of being in and out of the kitchen throughout my childhood. And, you know, in addition to not having that nutritional education, I realized through my experience through medical training, you know, we would have to interact with patients just to kind of, just, you know, get used to everything, of learning how to interact with a, you know, doctor, patient interaction and a lot of counseling. And I realized that we needed to educate our patients. We needed to really dedicate our time to spread, you know, good information. And a lot of that was just enhancing, you know, wellness. And I feel like there was a gap for this. And so what I did was when I went to culinary school, I made sure that I had a good, well-rounded school. And so I went into a school that focused on health promotion, and it was mainly centered around learning more about plants. So it was like plant-centered at that time. And for that school to be where it was when it first started was really, really, innovative, you know, because I think plant-based and veganism is more of like a quote-unquote relatively new phenomenon, but it talks about basic lifestyle changes and practices that, you know, has really been instilled for a very, very long time. So probably to as far back as like Hippocrates, you know, like let food be thy medicine. And so with that, you know, I went into health coaching and, you know, and I'll probably end by saying that before you ask your next question, that I really wanted to enhance my medical career with all this information. So from there, I started to speak, give demonstrations, workshops, you know, things like that. So,
well, that's a fascinating path. So you had completed medical school and then had this now degree in culinary arts. Where did you envision, or how did you envision these two would come together?
I ideally had it in my head that always would have a teaching kitchen, you know, centered around this. And I feel that one of the things that could enhance a medical practice, or maybe just a center in a community, was to have a kitchen where you would teach, you know, others. And I found that throughout the years, representatives in many different aspects, in other institutions, like Tulane University, like Harvard University, where they would pair up with the Culinary Institute of America and host their Healthy Kitchens, Healthy Lives conference. So you get to see this speckled throughout. And my first exposure was shadowing a physician called, his name was Dr. John Principe. And at the time, he had the first teaching kitchen out of a medical practice. And I followed him very, very early on you know, enjoyed my time. So, but ideally, in an ideal world, that's where you would do more of the educating, the teaching to your patients and fellow colleagues. So I do more of it in terms of spreading information for other physicians at health conferences.
So you had this vision of doing teaching kitchens, and next step, you went on to residency, right? And you trained in family practice?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And when you finished residency, what was next for you?
When I finished residency, I said to myself, you know, what did I want to do? You know, a lot of colleagues would, you know, join a health, you know, a health organization or join a group practice. For me, I didn't have anything to kind of hold me back. And I learned about locum tenens, which is to hold a place in Latin. And it's a very, at that time, a very uncommon position to embark on, because it needed you to just kind of pick up everything and just go, sort of like a traveling salesman, if you will, back in the day. And so it was a position where you're contracted, you work with an agency, and that allowed me to visit many different types of practice settings. I think graduates need to, you know, for the future, medical graduates in the future, need to ask themselves what kind of doctor they want to be. Not in terms of what specialty they want to go through. It's more about how they want to practice as a physician. And so I wanted to answer that for myself without being locked into a permanent contract. And so I ended up traveling to 4 different states, as you mentioned in the intro, and just learning so much about different environments and working with different people. And from there, I kind of learned how I practiced as my own style as a physician. Before landing in the Los Angeles where I currently am.
And in the locum tenens and the settings you've practiced, have you been able to kind of bring together culinary skills and lifestyle medicine, or are these just parallel paths?
They are, in a way, yes and no to answer that question. So wherever I am, I'm still practicing traditional family practice. And in between is where I implement culinary medicine and lifestyle medicine. So for the audience members who don't know what lifestyle medicine is, it's basically using evidence-based approaches to combat, prevent, and reverse lifestyle-related diseases like high blood pressure, diabetes, things like that. And I would use the knowledge that I've gained to be able to dispense it in one-on-one, group settings. Or I would actually hold community demos and workshops and be able to convey information like that, because I think it's more effective to be able to teach people in a group setting, because you also have that peer-to-peer interaction. You also have, they can, actually interact, and you can teach more than one effectively at once, And so from there, I also, landed in the national conference scene where I started teaching primary care physicians, where, you would dispense information to them and they could thereby take it to their own communities and teach their own, practices and communities as well. Because I'm a very huge proponent of the primary care physician as a role model and as a community leader. And I think that, no matter what, you're still being looked up to. And so I'm a big advocate for practicing what you preach and walking your talk. And so if you don't do it yourself, your patients are not going to, follow what you say. And, if you look at, a lot of research studies, most patients would still rely on a physician to, actual good, credible information. Even though we live in the world of Dr. Google and social media, people still come to us, right? So I think it's not only an obligation, but it's also a responsibility for the physician. So I, do my best to be able to enhance their knowledge base for this. So
that's great. And you have a very successful podcast. How did that come about?
The podcast came by accident. And if you believe in the law of attraction, things just kind of happen. And it just depends on, what you put out there for things to kind of come back to you. The podcast kind of came by accident where, my web designer, when I was revamping my website, just mentioned a specific podcast, a platform to record my audiobook. And at the time, I said to myself, well, it seems like, it makes it very, very easy, very streamlined to do it. I didn't have, a sound booth or a very fancy, recording studio. But it made it very simple. And so I said to myself, I feel like I'm a natural conversationalist, and I resonate more and I personally thrive more by talking to individuals. And over time, I've gained a lot of insights and aha moments and light bulbs over our heads between medical and wellness colleagues. And so I said to myself, why not capture this into a podcast similar to yours, Sharon, and be able to dispense that for other people far and wide. And so that's how I came up with the podcast Thrive Bites, to distill it in very, very short segments to make it digestible, and but also make it fun, casual, and formal. So since its launch in May, till this date of this recording, it's hit 31 countries so far, and I'm very humbled to have, you know, be able to touch a lot of people. So,
well, congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
And so your podcast is Thrive Bites and your book is Thrive Medicine. So mm-hmm. I want to talk about thriving.
Love it. Let's do it.
Well, you know, it's a great word, right? Because it implies you're not just living, you're going above and beyond and uh-huh. enhancing your experience. And it brings together, you know, not just physical well-being, but all the components of emotional and spiritual well-being. So it's just a great term. And, you know, being in healthcare, as you mentioned, in primary care, I don't think we ever do enough to these other dimensions. So we're in the business of helping people be healthy in the physical dimension, but not so much above and beyond. So I want to ask you, first of all, how did you, I guess, come across Thrive as the type of message in medicine you want to promote? And what does it mean to you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a huge advocate for like self-help and self-improvement books. And I picked up my first book back in 2011. It was titled No Opportunity Wasted. And it was authored by the hosts of The Amazing Race. And that book is a great read. And what it chronicled is a lot of individuals, young and older, that just simply had a very, very deep, satisfying, and fulfilling life. And when I went through that book, it basically asked you to write, you know, their call of action was to write a list of, and I call it a now list, and basically just to kind of put on that list what has transpired in your life that was a huge milestone for you. And that is very personal for everybody, right? That can be very specific for everybody. And I started listing out places I went, different life events, things that happened, and started listing them. And I started them, I went back as far as 2007. Right now I'm 35. So it was a huge list. I think I'm in around 350 right now. I got to check back. And so for me, that really, really jumpstarted me to living a deep and fulfilling life myself. Traveling is a huge passion of mine. And so growing up, we had a lot of road trips from, you know, I'm originally from New Jersey, and we had a lot of road trips going from New Jersey to Florida to visit my family. So traveling was instilled very early on. And I touched my last continent, which is Antarctica, in 2017. And so suffice to say, I traveled around the world, and I love to tell people that, you know, the real education in life is really traveling, because you just learn so much out of your four walls. I mean, if you think about it, I came up with the concept, you know, living a default life, as in my book. And the default life is kind of, you know, how most people would live. You know, you grow up, you go to school, you embark on a career, you get married, you know, you pay the bills, and then you end up passing on. And I just said to myself, you know what, there's something more to that type of routine lifestyle. There's something beyond that. And so I decided to, you know, embark that on my own, to be able to get into this self-discovery and self-exploration phase. And then from that, I noticed that the common theme was thriving, basically. And thriving to me is really that internal fire that is lit to be able to kind of push yourself forward, to kind of be able to get up in the morning, you know, gives you that drive, gives you that purpose and passion. And for, you know, you know, different people, it's for different reasons. For me, it's really about creating a ripple effect for people and inspiring others. And so I basically captured all that into my book, Thrive Medicine. And so I just really, really cared about elevating people's game and taking them from, you know, where they're at and to going beyond that. So,
yeah. And I have to say, for those in the audience who haven't read your book, I've read most of it, and it is just a wonderful, wonderfully put together collection of, you know, your personal stories, as well as a lot of the things that you talk about that help people thrive. So I have really enjoyed it. You know, finding purpose and knowing you should have purpose are two different things, right? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people on one level would love to have more motivation and more meaning in their life. And yet when you look at, you know, national surveys in this country, you know, a very, very small percentage of people, you know, most surveys around 10%, actually have purpose and meaning, especially surrounding their work. For people who are trying to find that fire, what are ways that you think can help spark it?
It's a very good question. For me, it stemmed from many different experiences. I think the first one is finding a mentor. A lot of people growing up may not have grown up in the best childhood, or maybe in the best environment. And I think having a mentor, whether it's a family or friend, or just, you know, a caring colleague, is paramount for being able to kind of guide you. I've had the blessings of having two wonderful parents. And, you know, they're immigrant parents. I'm a first generation American. And they came from a different culture and from a different society and generation. And with that came different values and different perspectives. And me and my younger sister kind of battled with that over time. And so very early on, like most people growing up, you have different types of what I call filters. And if you ever read the book, The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, it's like you're living in other people's stories and having their stories in the forefront. And so part of your journey, in my opinion, as a human being, is being able to take away those stories and take away those thoughts and really, really coming to a sense of who you are as a person and knowing, you know, who that is behind all those thoughts and behind all those, you know, stories and chatters that we have in our head, right? And finding a mentor, you know, helps with that in terms of guiding you through different scenarios and different life experiences. Traveling to me was a mentor, you know, a non-person mentor, that I, you know, traveled a lot, you know, on my own, actually. I think a second one is letting your mind wander, and that comes to back to wandering as well, but also letting your mind wander, meaning having time set aside for solitude, having time set aside for quietness and silence, because it is almost impossible now, living in the age that we, you know, live in, to be able to have that kind of time. Because if you think about it, we're always bombarded with our phone, our computer, our work responsibilities, our family responsibilities, societal responsibilities. And so you're always being bombarded with things to do and things to, you know, accomplish, where you don't really have a time to just quiet yourself. And I get, for me, the most ideas, and I get, for me, the most aha moments and light bulbs when it's quiet. And that could either happen in the shower while I'm driving, I love walking. So something as simple as just walking outside or going for a run, or when I'm traveling, I always have with me a book, which is the third thing. Is so number two is letting your mind wander, having a quiet space. Number three is documenting, you know, all your ideas and thoughts into a book, into a journal. I've had many types of journals. I've had, you know, just, you know, your regular journal where you just let your pen let loose and just write. Having a gratitude journal, and having a traveling journal. And if I didn't have a journal, and for people that don't typically journal, then just use your notes on your phone, and let's just document, you know, like every country that I go to, I always document the nuances that make us different from being American, right, or having grown in America. So I would document something like that. So those would be my three tips in terms of, you know, kind of letting yourself, giving yourself permission to just wander and discover and being creative, because I think that's needs to happen in terms of not just childhood, because we were allowed to play and just roam free. And I think as adults, we do less and less playing per se, quote unquote. And I think that's where the biggest self-discoveries lie in, is where you discover more about yourself.
I think those are three really wonderful suggestions. You know, to find a mentor, and very helpful that you pointed out that sometimes mentors aren't people, and sometimes even if they are people, they don't know they're your mentors. So, you know, it's not always a traditional mentor-mentee relationship. And just the power of wonder and play in journaling. I think those are just great. And thriving or kind of being driven by this purpose, it's really an evolution, right? At every stage, we're moving closer and closer to it. But it's not as though you either, you know, fully like you have it or you don't. They're just different degrees of thriving. Is that how you see it? And or are there ways you can gauge or measure where you are in this process of living in a way that helps you thrive?
Yes. So there are ways to, I think there's subjective ways to how to measure this, and there's objective ways. You know, for people that are more data driven and more analytical, it could be in the form of, you know, like book sales, or like, you know, in this podcast, how many listens, or, you know, things like that, right? You can use numbers to kind of measure it. For me, it's really the interactions that I get with people. And so I am more touched and humbled by people who come up to me that have heard me either through a blog post or an article that I've written, or a feature or a podcast, or even just from a book, where they have mentioned to me that they are moved or touched, or they implemented something different in their lives, or at least they have opened up a different perspective. And if it does just that, then I'm happy. It doesn't, for me, it's not about money. It's not about, you know, how much things are bought or seen or viewed or followed. That doesn't really matter to me. What matters to me is if it made an impact in your life, and if it's touched you to, you know, go and touch someone else. Because I don't think, in my philosophies, you know, you're born into this world with nothing, and you will leave this world with nothing. And so you have to think about what type of impact you want to leave in your place, what type of legacy you want to have in your place. And so for me, it's about leaving, you know, an inspirational legacy, and knowing that I've touched, you know, a lot of people, you know, means the most. So that's how I would measure it for myself.
And that's a great way to break it down into objective and subjective measures. And as a person is working towards thriving, there's always this hard part of, you know, you live in your own body and you only know your own life experience. And what one person may consider thriving may be ahead or behind the next person who's considered thriving. But what are ways to kind of hold that mirror up to yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we are amongst other individuals. And I think a part of learning about yourself, is knowing that every individual is unique. And there is no, you know, Colin other Colin in this world. There's no other Sharon in this world. There's no other Tina in this world. And every individual is just very, very beautifully unique. And if you come from the place where you are meant to express yourself in your own way and leave an impact on this world, whether you choose to intentionally do so or not, makes a difference. And so no matter who cross paths with you, no matter, you know, what you end up creating or making in this world, there's always going to be something similar, but not exactly you. And so if you come from that place where this is me, this is what my story is, this is who I am, then you tell it like that, then, you know, there's, you know, you don't really need to be bogged down with, you know, all the he said, she said, or what someone else is doing, or, you know, what you're coming across. Because as you concentrate on your own story, and as you learn and continue to evolve as your own individual person, you realize that that's how you make the impact, is by uniquely expressing who you are. So it is very easy to be able to compare yourself to others, but it takes away the power of who you are when you do that. So not to say that I haven't gone through it before. I've gone through it many different times. And I don't think this is an actual medical diagnosis for our healthcare practitioners, but something called the imposter syndrome seems to be floating around. And I think it's really about coming back to yourself and knowing who you are, right? So even professionally, you can compare yourself of, you know, this person is doing this, how come I'm not doing, you know, and it takes away on how great you are and how much potential you can, you know, impact.
You know, that is such a good reminder that it doesn't really matter, if you will, to compare it to others, because so much is just your contentment and peace with your, you know, the difference that you're making, and that is enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's really well put. Colin, before, you know, we have just a little bit of time left, and, you know, there's so much, you know, great information you're sharing. And I know in the health coaching that you do, I'm sure you help a lot of people through a lot of the stages that we're talking about. But before we leave, are there things that you want to share with our audience that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about?
Not really. I think we've covered a lot. I would probably say in this new year of 2020 to be able to kind of reflect back not on just the past year, but the past decade, and not just, you know, in terms of the years that's transpired, but also, you know, how you've developed as a person. I think not enough emphasis is made on personal development, especially growing up. And I think professionally speaking, in terms of not just looking at your missteps and mistakes and failures, but looking at what you've accomplished as well. And know that, you know, adding to your point, it is enough, you know what I'm saying? But I think that we want to continue to push ourselves, you know, to evolve as a human being and as people, you know? And I think there are a lot of things that are going on in this world that can be viewed as very negative. And I think that if we're able to hone back to who you are and really taking the time out to understanding who we are as people and who we are as individuals, we can make an impact. And don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to recognize, you know, rooms for improvement. You know, that's how you grow. You know, don't focus on your mistakes and failures. Focus on progress. Focus on the little steps. So, yeah.
That's great advice. Now, Colin, thank you so much for sharing all that information and for all the work that you do that does make a difference in everyone else's life. I think the things that help you thrive, we all benefit from. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
Yeah. Hope you have a great start to your new year.
Thank you. You as well.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by Emory Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website, emoryhealthcare.org/livewell. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.